Sunday.
It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over, and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And you gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. It's your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole, gather around the podcasting machine. Let's do this thing. All right. So much to talk about. Utah gets a win. BYU gets it handed to them. Utah State loses a tough one. Let's start with the good. Let's start with the Utes. 34-14 over Cal. I've never been more happier to be wrong. I had a bad feeling going into this one, and like I normally am on my predictions, dead wrong as the Utes give up the early touchdown. Lloyd, you had the pre and post on this one. Utes were down 7-0 after the end of the first quarter, and then they pour it on, outscoring Cal 34-7 the remainder of the game. Where did this thing turn? Because it turned quickly.
Well, this thing turned when all of a sudden Sione Vaki started just running all over Cal. Like, it was that offensive line got to work and holes opened up. And I mean, I was watching on the TV. You heard Lincoln Kennedy go, my grandma could run through that hole right there. And the Utah offensive line started going to work. And that opened it up a little bit for Bryson Barnes. And you saw Cal, like in that game, Cal started loading up the box. Cause they're like, you're not throwing on us. And that made it to where he was able to, 317 yards rushing as an offense. Sione Vaki led the way with 158 yards and two touchdowns to Quinton Jackson. He came up with 99 yards on 22 rushes, and Bryson Barnes had 50 yards rushing on 8 attempts. Between that, it was probably the most complete game. It wasn't the defense's best game, but it was, as far as the entire team, it was a complete game between the offense and the defense. They had 14 points that was scored that came off of turnovers, came off of a Lander Barton interception and a Jonah Ellis strip sack that led to another touchdown. So Jonah Ellis continues to impress on that defense. And how that guy was not the starter right out of the gates is amazing, because that guy's phenomenal.
I actually want to clear that up, because I know going through camp, I know what the Too Deep said, but just if you listen to players in post game conversations, and I went out to a couple media availabilities and talking to different players or talking to different Jonah Ellis was the guy in camp. So I don't know if they were trying to play a little bit of a game with the two deep, but Jonah Ellis through camp was the most dominant defensive end. And he just proved it through the season.
Yeah. You saw, by the way, you saw Connor O'Toole in there. Yeah. He left a little bit. I think he's a little bit sore is what Witt said in his post game. But Connor O'Toole, at one point, those guys got a half sack together because they met in the middle and they beat up the they ended up sending out that Mendoza. He ended up going out of the game, and they beat off the quarterback pretty good.
Well, I want to get back to Sione Vaki, because Hans, I want to get your thoughts on this. We've seen obviously Eric Weddle do this to a certain extent. We've seen some moments from the University of Utah. Who was the guy that UCLA once had the offense and defensive player of the week from the same
Jack?
Yeah, Miles Jack. I mean, this can be done, but how sustainable is this? Because you got a guy who's an elite defensive player for the University of Utah. And by the way, I'm not throwing cold water on this. If they can keep it rolling, keep it going, because this guy is just a phenomenal player. The question is, you know, can he continue to do this? Because he has provided a spark that this Utah offense is just desperately, desperately needed.
Hey, Hans, yeah. before you get into this real quick, I just wanted to say, like, he did come up. I mean, he had a 72-yard run where you could tell he was favoring a little bit. You could tell he was a little bit banged up. So I don't know what, you know, Witt said everybody for the most part came out healthy, but you could tell he was at some point he got, whether it was an ankle or what, he was a little bit banged up.
Well, I do think it's sustainable. And I think that there are some guys that are just driven for glory and driven for something bigger. And it just takes a unique dog, a unique athlete. It takes unique durability, and it takes a little bit of luck. So to Lloyd's point, you know, if he pulls up lame and he's having issues taking too many snaps in a game, then you have to take a look at that. But, you know, you watch Travis Hunter for Colorado. I know Colorado lost in that game against Stanford, but if you're taking 100 to 115 snaps, it can get really brutal. Back in the old AFL days, Scotty,
yeah,
the most snaps I took in a game was 105.
Oh, geez.
When I was playing center and nose tackle. And I remember coming out of the game, it was against the New York Dragons, and I remember coming out of the game, sitting in my locker, and I was just beat. I felt like I'd gotten put through a laundry mat and just torn apart, and it was a really horrible feeling. So I know I can't do it. I know my body couldn't hold up to it. I know that my endurance, I couldn't do it week in and week out. But maybe there are some guys that can't. So if he can do it, I think the staff has to go to him and say, Sione, this is just a really rare occasion, and this is a rare opportunity. And, you know, if we can make some noise nationally, this could be really big for you. And guys, as we're watching things play out, I watched that Notre Dame USC game last night. USC is beatable. We talked about this. They're beatable. Utah can beat them. They can beat them the way they just beat Cal, by using Bryson Barnes and Sione Vaki and throwing some Jaquinda Jackson at them. And you know, they can do it. So I think you just go to Sione and say, do you like what you're doing? Yeah. Can you continue to do what you're doing? Yeah. If he says, no, coach, there's too much stress on me on one area or the other, you know, but I think you just have that conversation with him. But I do think it's sustainable because it just takes a unique athlete,
yeah,
that can do it.
By the way, you did see Jaquinda Jackson limp off again, but he did come back. But I'm telling you, like, his running style between him and Vaki, like, those are your two. Those are your two main dogs. I mean, Glover was six attempts for 12 yards. I mean, he's not doing anything whatsoever. I mean, he's getting hit in the backfield and he's not breaking any tackles. I mean, Jaquinda Jackson ran over a dude, and the guy had to get up and leave the game. That's how hard he ran over him. I mean, he runs with such a power that it's like, you know, you're going to need that. I mean, it was funny, before the game started, in the pregame, Christian talked about how maybe this is a game you give him another game to get healthy, you know, another week or whatever, because, you know, that high ankle sprain, you maybe about a month, then you're getting really close to about having a month. But my feeling was, if you need him, you got to play him, because this Cal game was, as we talked about earlier in the week, I mean, it was a must win.
Yeah.
It was a must win for him. And so, I mean, he ended up, like I said, he had 22 carries and he looked pretty good. He's a little bit slow on the cuts, but it was impressive. But Bryson Barnes, by the way, I think that guy deserves, if you didn't respect Bryson Barnes before, he deserves a little bit of respect, because the guy, there were still times where receivers weren't getting open, and the guy It was a scramble drill. I mean, the guy was running around like a chicken with his head cut off, and he was elusive. And somehow, all of a sudden, it was, you know, it was 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6, and the guy ran, you know, would run for the first down. Like he converted a couple first third downs on just on his own with his legs. And the guy battled out there, so I think he deserves a lot of respect.
Well, and also too, you look at the line, and you know, 15 to 21, buck 28, not a lot of yards, but didn't throw an interception. And, you know, 50 yards, you're right, 50 yards rushing on the ground on eight carries, keeping plays alive, extending plays. I heard the post game. I was hanging out with you, Lloyd, in the post game show, and Kyle Whittingham said, look, no, he's not the fastest guy, but he's elusive and he's smart. And he keeps his eyes downfield. He knows where to pick up the first down. He knows how to move the chains. He knows how to avoid defenders. And you know what? Look, this is what you're going to get. And Hans, it goes to the bigger conversation. And you know, we had talked throughout the week that is there going to be a massive offensive overhaul with Nate Johnson and changing who your identity is on offense? Or do you play it safe? Or not play it safe, I guess I should say. Keep your system that you currently have and, you know, go to Bryson Barnes or maybe go to Brandon Rose or go that route. And we saw the decision that Utah decided to make and say, okay, let's stick with our offense and go with Bryson Barnes and put him back in the lineup. And yesterday it made sense to go that route.
Well, I didn't know if he was going to be available, obviously, through the week of shows, but anybody that was listening heard me kind of talk about Bryson Barnes is what Andy Ludwig's offense is more than what Nate Johnson is.
And it was obvious, by the way, Hans. It was so obvious.
Yeah. So that's the only reason that I continue to say if he's available, if he's not injured, then you play Bryson Barnes. It's because he just runs what Andy Ludwig does. And I know that Andy feels comfortable in his offense, and there's no reason for him to change it if he's got a guy that he feels like can at least run some semblance of it. So that really is the only reason that I continue to talk about Bryson Barnes playing that game, because I just thought, man, he just runs that offense better.
I think he was able to play a little bit looser as well because, you know, Nate Johnson, he didn't see the field. He wasn't out there not once. So you didn't have the, you know, here there you got a first down, Bryson. Let's bring in Nate and let's see what he can do. Or it wasn't that back and forth like the Florida game and some of those other games where it's like there was no rhythm. This offense, it was the first time that I think we saw a rhythm with the offense.
Well, let me tell you this. You guys have known Kyle Whittingham for a lot of years, and I've known him for a lot of years. I think that coming out of that loss going into the bye week, probably the day after that, I'll bet that Kyle came into the meeting, said, this is how it's going to go, and there are no other conversations. And at that very moment, that gave you 14 days or whatever to work on one thing, and one thing only, without any other conversation or any other confusion. And when you give somebody 14 days and it's all about them and it's all about that moment, you can get a lot done. And that's what great leadership's about, guys. It's making a very hard decision, but making it definite, making it as early as you possibly can so that everybody can get on the same page. And I think it paid off. Kyle Whittingham's made a living off of doing this.
Yeah. Yep.
He makes a decision and he doesn't waver. And if it fails, then he'll make a different decision later. But I think he went into the bye week. He's like, it's going to be Bryson Barnes. It's nobody else. He's the best we've got. Let's go with that. That's how I could see that conversation going. And it paid off big.
Well, and that's what he said on Monday when he didn't announce who the quarterback was. But he told the media, he's like, look, I will make the decision on Monday so that guy has all week to be the guy. And looking back in hindsight, I mean, it screamed Bryson Barnes. Like, you know, you know, we were up in the air and we were all making our thoughts as to what it could be. Could it mean Cam's coming back or they're committing to Nate Johnson or whatever the case might be. But honestly, reading between the lines, I mean, it was pretty, you know, looking back with hindsight being 2020, you know, we can tell that it was Bryce and Barnes. But that was Kyle Whittingham saying, enough of this nonsense. I'm tired of all the indecision. I'm tired of splitting up reps. I'm tired of all this other stuff going on. We're going to commit to a guy, and that's it. And you're right, Lloyd. Nate Johnson didn't see the field because he's like, I'm not screwing around with this anymore. It's too big of a – we're having too good of a season. We're having too good of a defense. There's too much on the line here for us to be dipping our toes in different sides of the water. Enough of this. I've had it. And he went with Bryson Barnes and told Bryson probably, look, you're the guy. We're going to sink or swim with you. Now go out there and get it done. And that's exactly what he did. 34-14, the final in this one. Utes get the victory. All right, Hans, you're still down in Dallas. You got a flight later today. BYU, that was not pretty.
Yeah, so many problems right now. And what's interesting to me, you watch Utah's offense struggle for a couple weeks, and they make some really hard decisions. And they think outside of the box with Bryson Barnes and Sione Vaki, and they put their foot down and they go back to what they know. And they ended up with whatever it was, 450 yards of offense in that game. And I know Cal's not exactly a world beater defensively, but they're not the worst either. So I think that there's a blueprint. You're going to have to think outside of the box. You're going to have to find something that is different and going to work. And I know that they tried that a little bit in the bye week because they made an offensive line shuffle. They put Connor Pitt center and Paul Miley at guard, and they moved Waylon Lapuaho over to the right guard, and they tried. And then they ran Miles Davis a little bit and tried Miles just to see if they could get a spark, but they're going to have to think outside of the box offensively because it's too many performances of failure at this point for them. You know, Keenan Slovis comes out and first offensive series throws a pick six, guys.
Yeah.
And that's the third defensive touchdown that they've given up this year. And it's a head scratcher. And, I don't know. It was one of the tougher games that I've watched for BYU.
I didn't think they were going to – I thought it was maybe the rush game that was where BYU was going to struggle. And I'm talking about on the defensive side. I did not think that Josh Hoover was going to come in and throw down 439 yards and four touchdowns. Like, I mean, that's – It was over the top is what killed them. And that's not where I thought where I thought they were going to get beat. I was a little bit surprised that he was able to come in and do that.
Well, I think BYU was surprised too. As you mentioned, 58 passing attempts, 37 completions. And what was crazy, you guys, is most of those throws are underneath throws.
And then just athleticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one pass that went for 42 yards, but I'm telling you, that even was breaking tackles. Okay, so this is our podcast. We get to talk about what we want. So here's the deal. They put Malik Moore back in and gave him a chance. Malik had not seen the field for a while. And I know I go back to that Arkansas game. It's really the last time we saw Malik Moore on the field, and he came from that safety spot to make a tackle on the running back and didn't make the tackle. And they ran for whatever it was, like a 70 yard touchdown. And he was off the field. Well, they put him back on the field against TCU, and JP Richardson catches a pass and Malik throws his shoulder into him, doesn't wrap up. And Malik was taken off the field. And I didn't see him back on the field. Maybe he was back out there, but I didn't see him back on the field after that. you think about how tough that is, guys, because you know you're getting down to Prue Wakely and you're down to Slade, and you know you're getting really thin. You got all the way down to Preston Rex, who is Isaac Rex's brother, and he's just a baby. He's just a freshman, and you're putting him out there because you just don't have other options. And I'm looking at Malik Moore like, man, you got to play better, and you got to wrap up that tackle. He knows it, guys. You know it. Jay Hill definitely knows it. You got to make that tackle. You can't give up that touchdown. And I'm sure that there's a lot of frustration there. And then, you know, BYU's still in this game. And you get TCU with a pass down the sideline, and Crew Wakely breaks it up. It would have made it 3rd and 10. And on TCU's side of the field, and it would have made it a really tough conversion. And Crew Wakely stands over the top of the guy and does that safe, you know, the bent knee safe motion that
I saw this umpire.
Yep.
He got a 15-yard flag. And that drive ended up in points. And I've got to imagine that Jay Hill is just like, what are we doing? You know that he doesn't have patience for that stuff, guys. No. You know how Jay Hill operates. He doesn't have patience for that stuff, and he's dealing with some really tough things right now.
Yeah, I was watching this game because I had both the games are going on at the same exact time, and I was watching in studio both these games, and just in the little bit efforts that I would watch at this time, I saw probably about 5, maybe 6 missed tackles. Like, it was, the tackling was definitely not up to par.
Well,
for the BYU defense.
And we knew that this defense was going to be a work in progress. And that was before all the injuries at safety. And I mean, Crew Wakely, when he was at Utah State, couldn't break the 2-deep at Utah State. And now he's playing significant minutes in a big, big role for BYU. And I think that's just that shows you how dire the situation is there. I mean, the unforced errors are just ridiculous. And then the poor tackling. And so, I mean, it's going to take a minute to restock the shelves there at BYU on the defensive side, but you can only scheme your way so much until ultimately it comes down to talent. And I think that's just what BYU's dealing with. And we had worried about that before the season. And I think some of the early season success thought, okay, well, you know, maybe they're going to be okay. Maybe they'll find a way to get through this. And Jay Hill's keeping this thing together with duct tape. But there's going to be games like this where you're playing TCU, who is the defending. I mean, I know they lost the Big 12 championship game, but this team was in the national championship game a year ago. They got a lot of championship experience on this team. And I know they're not having the season that they would have hoped, but this is still a crazy, freakish, talented team. And BYU just got exposed from a talent standpoint. That's just bottom line what it was. They just got exposed from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, and I think TCU found their quarterback. And you guys heard me talking about my worry about what TCU would do around this Hoover kid. And I thought it would put more emphasis on Amani Bailey, and I thought that the running game would be more an emphasis, but they didn't have a lot of film. They had 22 passes to look at from Josh Hoover. And he showed a lot of mistakes in those 22 passes. He had thrown 2 interceptions. There were 2 others that were dropped in those 22 passes. And he had a couple of fumbles at the mesh point. And he just made some mistakes. But he did show an ability to throw. And he also showed that he is a throw first guy, and Chandler Morris was not that. And it was crazy. 447 yards, guys, to 13 different receivers. And I talked to Eddie Heckard in the post game, and I asked Eddie, I said, 13 guys with receptions in this game. I said, is that difficult to prepare for? And he said, it's really tough. He said, because we're sitting there watching film, trying to figure out what receiver breaks what way in a quick slant, or how, because some guys delay their break, some guys are fast into their break, some guys are slow into a slow go, some guys shift real fast. And he's like, we're watching film of all these different receivers and they all do something different. Well, now you give them a quarterback that can and will hit those receivers, because Chandler Morris would just take off and run. Josh Hoover sat there and dealt. And TCU might have found a guy that makes this TCU team really tough moving forward.
Yeah. And we talked to Brian Estridge about that earlier in the week, the play-by-play guy at TCU, and asked him, like, how are you keeping track? And he's like, look, I put my spotting boards together, and I need, you know, I don't have enough room for all these wide receivers. And it's something he said, that's just who they're going to be this year. You're not a team that's got three or four wide receivers that they go to. I mean, they will spread the ball around and they will hurt you and hurt you badly. I mean, there's a lot of hungry mouths to feed, and they're finding a way to get it done. And they certainly got it done yesterday. But Hans, I want to talk, you know, big picture here. I mean, you got Texas Tech rolling into town next week. What do you, I mean, from a confidence standpoint, you've had 2 weeks to rest up, prepare for this game. And then you get smoked like that. Could this be kind of a, and I know BYU's still 4-2 and they'll get to bowl eligibility, but does this feel like the season's on the brink a little bit if BYU can't recover from this from a confidence standpoint?
Yep. 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 I would like to paint a more positive picture, but this was a thumping that makes you worry a little bit. And it exposed some areas, and it makes me feel like BYU is vulnerable, because their run game just continues to struggle. And until a Sione Vaki-like individual walks through that door, I don't know how much more it can improve. I think that you continue to push Miles Davis. That's what I think. Let LJ Martin rotate, but try to push Miles Davis more. But you know what I really think, guys? I think at this point, you just say, hell with the running game. Hell with it.
And, you are who you are.
Yeah. And just saying, okay, well, let's spread it out. Let's get it to Chase Roberts and Parker Kingston and Cody Epps. Finally, he finally had a reception, boys. That's his first two receptions of the year. We're in this game. Let's get it out to Epps and Lassiter and Keanu Hill. And Isaac Rex didn't have a meaningful reception in that game. Get it out to Isaac Rex and go to Keelan Marion and just push it out to the receivers and go and say hell with the run game, because it's not working. And it's also creating a lot of bad third down situations. So I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, if you can't find it, then just go away from it and get yourself bowl eligible by making yourself an all-pass team. The other thing I wanted to mention, guys, because Keaton Slovis was wildly inaccurate at times in this game. Keaton took a shot. There was a corner blitz, and the corner came off the blitz and was actually blocked, but hit the speed rush on the around the backside, and as Keaton cocked his throwback, the corner kind of grabbed the ball and pushed back on his arm, and Keaton went to throw it, and then they hit it pretty hard, and he went down hard. And after that, there were some wild passes thrown. I think Keaton took some bumps and bruises on that throwing arm, and they're going to have to check that out and make sure that's good to go.
Anytime I hear something like that, I always think, as somebody that's had several shoulder surgeries, I think, oh man, don't let it be like any sort of labrum or anything like that.
Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I worry about it too. But that's something that they're going to have to look at and pay close attention to. He finished the game, but there were throws that really got away from him, and it just didn't feel right. So if you're going to vacate the running game and just go to a passing game, which maybe you do that just based off of not being able to run efficiently, Keaton Slovis better be ready to throw.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do have concerns. Scotty, I've got some big concerns with this BYU team.
It's not like the what a weird flowing season. I just kind of thinking of how, I mean, we go into that bye week and you have BYU that is just flying high and everything's great. And Utah is like down in the valley low. And they're like, man, are we even going to win another game? And it was just kind of a weird feeling. And then all of a sudden, they've just completely swapped again. And Utah's now, I think we're going to beat USC. And BYU's trying to figure out, I don't think we can run, the peaks and valleys of these two teams right now, and I'm just talking about these two teams alone, like it's just kind of what a weird season. And they're still having, BYU's still 4-2, and now Utah's 5-1. They're still having good seasons, but it's just the emotional valley between these two teams and probably their fan base is just wild.
It goes back and forth.
I don't remember a season quite like that, but like between these two going up and down like this. And I know it's happened, but it's what
it goes back and forth. And to Scotty's point, Texas Tech is the Alamo.
Yeah.
Texas Tech it's your standing ground. If you're going to get bowl eligible, you got to beat Texas Tech because this is a team that's 3-4. They just lost to Kansas State. Kansas State has shown vulnerabilities. They've shown that they're not the potential Big 12 champs that a lot of us thought that they were. I had picked Kansas State based off their 5 offensive linemen and their returning talent that they had coming back. The 3 of their 5 offensive linemen are NFL guys, and I don't know if they had injuries up front or not because I haven't studied Kansas State, but they've shown vulnerabilities, and they thumped Texas Tech kind of later in that game. They really separated. So this is it, man. This is the standing ground, and BYU has to get ready for the Red Raiders coming up next weekend.
It's your Morning After podcast, all brought to you by Utah Community Credit Union. Love where you bank. So BYU suffers the loss in a blowout fashion. Utah wins in blowout fashion. A lot of drama in Logan on Friday night, and Hans, I was kind of texting you back and forth throughout this one. Utah State, Fresno State. Fresno State just a week ago was a top 25 team. They came to Logan, and man, this was, look, I understand. I call the games for Utah State. I generally want them to win because it's fun to call a winning game, but man, that was a crazy drama field, crazy entertaining game. Unfortunately, Utah State comes away with a 37-32 loss, and just big play after big play after big play. Utah State racks up nearly 600 yards of total offense, 363 through the air, 205 on the ground, to a Fresno State team that had only given up about 95 yards a game on the ground. Utah State rushes for 205, but defensively just couldn't get stops. Aggies were down 11 in the third quarter. Rally, they take a late lead. 32-31, they give up a late touchdown to Fresno State with 2 minutes left, and the Aggies have time to go down the field and score, and they get down to about the 38-yard line, and Cooper Laga throws an interception on a crossing route, corner undercut the route, picks it off, and that's how the game ends, with Utah State losing a heartbreaker, 37-32. Tell you what, there's not a ride at Lagoon that can really fully compliment what this Utah State team is this year. They weren't down 17-0. They were tied 7-7 at the end of the first quarter. So it wasn't they weren't down, but they were down double digits at one point in this game and rallied to take the lead, but just couldn't get it done against a really, really good Fresno State team. Tell you what, though, if you have not had a chance to watch Jalen Royals, the wide receiver for Utah State, you owe yourself to go and check out the highlight film. This kid came out of JC, had 9 catches at Georgia Military College, showed up at essentially an open tryout for Utah State out of the blue, and he ran a 40 and a 4.33 and a 4.31. They put him through some drills. He caught everything, and then they said, all right, here's a scholarship offer, just based on that alone. And he played in every game last year but didn't have a single catch last year, and this year, he is just piling on. He had 7 catches, 125 yards, and 2 touchdowns in that game against Fresno State. I'm pulling up his season stats right now because, Hans, I want you to go back and take a look at this kid because he is just playing out of his mind. On the season, he's got 39 catches, 647 yards, 9 touchdowns. He's had 7 touchdowns in the last 3 games. 5 of those 7 have gone for 50 plus yards or more.
Jeez.
They almost had 3 guys with 100 over 100 yards again, by the way.
Yep.
Almost they had, is it the same 3?
Yep, same 3.
I know Vaughn was one of them. Was Davis the other one that had 100, over 100?
Davis had 75 as Jalen Royals, or not Jalen Royals.
No, I know in the last game.
Oh,
was
yes.
It the same 3? These are their 3 targets. That's what I thought. I'm like, they almost had 3 guys with over 100 yards again.
Yep.
I love that Royals and Vaughn are competing for catches and yards, man. They're going back and forth. But they got to have the quarterback that can consistently do it. And they probably should have scored in that final drive. But as you mentioned, you have the pick. So where are we at now with Cooper Legault and McKay Hillstead?
McKay Hillstead was finally cleared from concussion protocol, I want to say, on Thursday of last week. The rule is you have to have 5 days from concussion protocol when you don't have symptoms before you're cleared to play in practice, which he has now hit. Coach said he's got a decision to make. This is me, again, reading between the lines. I think McKay Hillstead's your starting quarterback next week against San Jose State. I think that Cooper Legault had a great run and obviously won that game against UConn. Big game against Colorado State and played his butt off against Fresno State. Again, had 360 yards passing in that game. But I think ultimately the future is McKay Hillstead and he'll probably be your starter if, again, that's just me speculating. So take that for what it's worth. But I would be shocked if McKay Hillstead's not your starter this week against San Jose State.
I'm glad I'm not the guy that has to make those decisions because the amount of yards, and I know he's thrown some interceptions, but the amount of yards that Cooper Legault's put up since coming back is like putting that guy on the bench. That's a tough decision to have to make.
What was his first pick, Scotty?
That one actually wasn't on him. Really weird miscommunication, and we talk about Royals and Vaughn, and they were running a wide receiver, kind of a tunnel screen. And both of them thought that they were the intended receiver. So they both kind of take that step back, which means one of them's not blocking. And the play, and Coop throws it out to the outside. Both of them are there. And without anybody blocking, the defender comes in and blows it up, and the ball gets tipped up in the air and intercepted. So just kind of a really fluky, weird miscommunication play. That one's not on him. The second interception was the first one certainly wasn't. So
and the second one was the most costly because they were driving.
Yep, they were driving for sure. But I tell you what, Utah State defensively, they've got some things to shore up. They looked really good defensively against the Colorado State team last week, and then this week, especially giving up that late touchdown drive, really put them behind the eight ball. And so they've got some things to shore up. They're really young. They're really inexperienced. They'll get there. But they've got some work to do, certainly, on the defensive side. But they're kind of getting into the softer part of the schedule now. This first run was just murderer's row, and now things are going to lighten up a little bit. San Jose State's got a really good quarterback in Javon Cordero, but other than that, I think they're – I don't know if they won last night. I'll go check. They were 1-5. They played New Mexico. They were certainly favored to win that game. So they're either 1-6 or 2-5, one of the two. And
they beat them.
They did.
52-24.
Yeah, I assumed that they probably would because New Mexico is New Mexico and they're a train wreck. So there you go. It should be an interesting week. But also, too, on the flip side, like Utah State can't go in and just assume that they're going to beat San Jose. You can't do that at all because the Spartans certainly have the weapons to beat. Utah State's not in a position where they can just go, oh, yeah, that's a W. Not by any stretch of the imagination. So they better be ready to go and get this thing behind them pretty quick, or they could lose that game.
Speaking of which, Wyoming pushed Air Force pretty hard yesterday.
They were up 14-0 out of the gate, and then Air Force rallies to get the win.
How about Air Force having to come back from a deficit and being able to do it?
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
No,
Air Force is a good team, man. That's a good team.
Well, I will say this was probably ended about 2 a.m. your time, Hans, but did you see how the Boise State-Colorado State game ended?
No.
So this was as crazy of an ending as you'll see in college football. And college football has, you know, it's filled with them. But with 6 minutes left, Boise State is up 30-10 on Colorado State. And the Rams score a touchdown, get an onside kick, score another touchdown, able to get the I'm not sure if they got the second onside kick or because I know there was a penalty on it, but they were able to get the ball back, go down and then throw the Hail Mary. Dallin Holker, the Lehigh grad, catches on the deflection, the onside kick to tie the game up at 30 apiece on the last play of regulation. Colorado State gets hit with a celebration penalty. So the extra point is pushed back 15 yards, but yet the guy knocks it through. And on the final play of the game, Colorado State wins 31-30, scoring three touchdowns in the final 6 minutes of the game against Boise State.
No way.
Jeez.
No way.
Couldn't happen to a better team, honestly. Did I say that? Wait, oh, you said it's our podcast. We can say whatever we want, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do whatever we want.
Colorado State. Wow. Man. Woo. That's good. That looks good for Utah State. Colorado State going out and getting a win.
Yeah.
That's a good look. Did you guys see that poor Camden Lewis, the kicker for Oregon?
Oh, man. That's we were watching cool. that one. Scotty was in studio when we were watching that one.
Lloyd, come to an end. Tell him who said he was going to miss the field goal.
Yeah, Scotty and Christian both said he was going to miss the field goal.
That was a 43-yarder, man. That's a 43-yarder to tie that thing up
in one of
the biggest games of the weekend.
And Dan Lanning decides he's going to go for it on 4th and 5 from their own 48. I mean, like, what are you doing? Your defense is actually
make him go the length of the field, Dan.
Make him. Pin him. You have the lead.
I cannot believe that, man. And then Penix, in two plays, goes 53 yards and 33 seconds after they stopped Oregon on that 4th and 3.
What an unbelievable Saturday of football. Yeah.
No, that's what college football is all about yesterday, man. That was so much fun. Hey,
USC gets their teeth kicked in by the Domers.
Jeez, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, Notre Dame's going to do what Notre Dame normally does, and they'll probably make I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but they'll screw it up somehow because they always do. But I think that just showed you how vulnerable USC is and sets up, obviously, that big game against Utah next week. Caleb Williams is already thinking of that NFL payday. He's a generational player, make no mistake, but he's the kind of guy, too, that might say, like, you know what, there's nothing else to play for here. There's nothing else to go for. So I'm going to prepare for the NFL draft, which honestly may not be a bad idea considering he'll be the number one overall pick and you don't want to screw it up. All right. So we need a food update from the road. You're in the, one of the food capitals of the world, Hans. Did you overdo it yesterday?
Wait, hold on. I want to know how it went with Booner last night.
All right. We got some house cleaning to do. You know, the best 3 hours of my day are every day from 12 to 3, right?
Oh, this is awkward, by the way, because I saw the tweet. And I know. To myself,
and
then,
of course, all the people.
Let me set it up because Scotty sent a tweet that said there's nothing better in broadcasting life.
Not what I said. That's not what I said. I said some nights. I didn't say some middays. I said some nights are better than others. Working with Ron Boone, calling a Utah Jazz game is as good as it gets.
Then you followed it up with, I've never had a better time on radio.
No, I did not say that.
It's almost as if we were meant to be on air together.
Oh, stop.
My radio soulmate.
Oh, okay.
Followed it up with a tweet that said, I hope Booner and I could someday have a daily show together. You knew that tweet was going to hurt my feelings.
I didn't know. I did not think it would hurt your feelings. No, absolutely not.
You didn't have to tag me in it.
And I didn't
have to tag me in it.
I didn't need I didn't need all your cronies to come and be like, oh, ow, oh, my goodness, Hands, that was a shot. Oh, boy, he took a jab at you. Like, hey, people, no, stop it. Come on. It's not what I meant.
I've never had more fun in a broadcast of my life than calling his ass game with Booner.
Man, it's like that meme of that guy that's walking with his girlfriend and he's looking back at the girl that just walked by. That's totally what it was like.
I don't need this.
The sad thing.
It was pretty bad.
It was not bad.
The sad thing, like, Kevin White is the girl that he's looking back, or the girl that I'm not even a girl that's by him or behind him. I'm just some drunk street. Like, hey, if you ever have a minute,
you're not even in the meme.
Oh, I sure love attention.
You guys are the worst, man.
Kevin White's grabbing onto Scotty's arm, looking at him like, what? What are you doing?
Oh, hey. I'm sure Kevin got hurt by that too, but you're right. Look, Booner's a lot of fun.
Stop.
When you invited Booner onto your post game, when are you going to do that?
Hey, Booner, you want to come up to Logan? I'll put a headset on you anytime. Come up to
Logan?
Yeah, come on up.
Throw the headset on.
Throw that headset on. Let's talk. Let's break down some Utah State football.
Evan, give me your headset.
Hey, honestly, what'd you think, though?
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. It was, I don't know, it was exhibition basketball. There was a lot of good. There was a lot of bad. Jazz dominated for most of that game. Then they put, you know, some of the... got down into the bench a little bit in the fourth quarter, and then that's when they made their run. But ultimately, it was when the starters were in, the Jazz were dominant, and Lauri Markkanen had felt like 75 points, could have scored whenever he wanted to. Portland's going to be abysmal defensively. They can score. Portland's got some scores, but boy, defense isn't a high priority for Chauncey Billups right now, and the Jazz just carved him up. But good energy for a preseason game. It was a good vibe in there, and overall, it was a fun atmosphere. And I don't know, man, you know, I'm really fired up that you because I know you've called the bowl games, but to really call a game for a team that you're, you know, emotionally invested is not the right word, but that you cover on a weekend or on a day in and day out basis, and calling an NBA game, oh my goodness, man, you forget how much better because. Than the NBA is from standpoint, from the college standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you're calling it and you're just like, oh, this is different. And don't get me wrong. I love my Mountain West Conference hoops. I love it. And I love being a part of it. But when you call an NBA game, you're like, oh, this is different. This is different. This has a different vibe to it for sure.
Well, I had John and you sounded great. Like, are we about to have a Wally Pipp moment?
Well, Locke was doing TV, so it's not like Locke was out.
I don't know. I mean, like I'm telling you, you sounded great. Locke doesn't sound great, but I'm just saying you sounded real, like it was very comfortable for you.
And it's Scotty, how quick could Keyonte George get up to snuff? Because I've seen a lot about Keyonte George and just where he's at right now. Can he be an important piece, a big piece for the Jazz this season?
Yes. Yeah. And Booner and I were talking about that, and he played 23 minutes last night, and Booner's like, I think he can play 23 minutes a game for this Jazz team.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, that's a big number. And he goes, I think he's certainly more than capable of it. And we saw some flash. You know what was good is – Portland, and look, again, I know it's exhibition play, but Portland had the lead all the way. I mean, Jazz led by as many as 15. They trimmed it down to one, and the crowd was getting antsy because, you know, look, you pay for a ticket. They don't care if it's preseason or not. They want to see a win. And so, you know, there's that tense moment with like 2 minutes left, and Portland had cut it all the way down to one, and it was a big possession, and Taylor Hendricks lined up a right wing three and buried it. And it's like, all right, that's good for the kid's confidence. Like, he needed that. To be able to be like, all right, I can play at this level. I can do this. But Keyonte George was just, I mean, he was the floor general. He had a couple bad turnovers. But I'm telling you, I think this kid eventually is going to be a starter for the Utah Jazz. And I think that I don't know if it'll be this season, but I could certainly see a possibility where this guy could be your starter come January, February, a point guard, and bring Colin Sexton off the bench or Chris Dunn off the bench. Chris Dunn was great. I think Chris Dunn should be your starter. I'll plant my flag in that hill with Ben Anderson. Like, I think Chris Dunn could be a starter.
I love him.
And I think that I think that's certainly well within the realm of possibility there for sure.
Dude was 4 of 4, 1 for 1 from 3-point. Like, he was flawless in that game, and only played 11 minutes.
Yep.
By the way, next month, both Taylor Hendricks and Keontae George turn 20.
Oh, so wow. You believe? I mean, like, put this in perspective, Hans. Like. My oldest and your oldest are, you know, 1 to 2 years older than these guys.
Yeah.
Like let that just sink in for a second as to the youth that we're talking about.
Yep. They're young and they are, they're my Mackey's age, and they're just spectacular, man. I know it's hard to believe that kids this young are playing at that level, but you got to see it front and center. You got to call it with Booner last night, and you are 100% right. The level of difference and difficulty and athleticism, it is disgusting what these kids are able to do and how good and how elite that level is.
Yeah, it's just amazing. All right, now my original question, food-wise, what'd you do? You're in Texas, man. I want to get the report.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but Scotty, back when I was with the New Orleans Voodoo, we came in to take on Dallas's AFL team. And we had this center nose guard. He and I were best buddies at 1 and 2. His name was Chris Janik. And after that game, back in 2003, or 2004, whichever it was, he said, "Oh, dude, I'm hungry. Let's go eat." So we went down to the Fort Worth area by the Stockyards.
Yeah.
And there's this steakhouse that was called 3H. And I think I've talked to you about it. It was the best steak I'd ever had in my life. It was medallions and a mushroom sauce.
Yes.
The medallions were just so good, like a real nice buttery texture and great flavor. So yesterday, Greg was kind of going back and forth with Matt, the spotter, and they were talking about it. He said, "Hey, I'm just telling you, I had a steak here 20 years ago. I don't know if this place is still open." Well, Matt does the research, and crazy enough, I remembered the name. He does the research, and it's open. So we went after the game, and I got the 26-ounce porterhouse.
26.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said 66 ounce.
The big, like, 66. Yeah.
No. Give me the 66er. Can we get a, and if I can get him to put down this, can we get the family of shirts?
There's nothing left there, but
Shep, can we get Shep a shirt?
There's nothing left there, but a little bit of gristle and fat.
And it was the same, man. It was the same amazing, great steak. And I got the steak fries, which were just incredible. I started out with the chips and queso. That was really good. They did a big old bulky dinner salad. I did blue cheese and ranch, and then I polished off this huge brownie skillet with 4 scoops of vanilla ice cream, caramel swirl, and hot fudge swirl. And 3 Diet Cokes.
But, yeah, you know, because of calories. Because of
calories.
Yeah.
And I, dude, it was so good. It was so good. And I just sat there in all my glory with all the memories of what I was playing, because the last time I was in that building, I was 325 pounds of freaking twisted steel and sex appeal and, you know, filling my oats back then. And then I'm sitting there, like, geez, I'm really a has been that never was.
By the way, that's why 105 plays nearly killed you, because of the weight difference. Yeah. Like, that's carrying that amount of weight and going both ways is not exactly easy.
That's true. That is very true, Lloyd. But But I was still moving okay at 325.
Twisted Steel and Sex Appeal. I think that's the next name. This should be the new name of the podcast.
It was so good, dude. By the way, guys, I think I may have upset Greg a little bit.
Uh-oh. Honeymoon's over?
So, I think so. So, we'll ask him. Next time he comes on with us, we'll ask him, but.
I didn't catch that. You broke up a little. What happened?
I said I think I upset Greg.
No! So what did you do?
Get him on Wednesday, so Lloyd.
We were walking. What's that?
Said Lloyd, you got to get him on Wednesday. We're gonna have to talk about this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I'm curious to see how he felt about it because I don't think it went well. Okay, so. I was just having a little bit of fun, and you guys know that I like to have fun.
Yes.
And one of my favorite things to do, which my wife hates, it bugs her, but my favorite thing to do is kind of push my wife into people because it makes her feel uncomfortable. Well, we were walking down the street to the steakhouse, and Greg was on the phone talking to somebody, and there was this mid-50 couple, old cowboy couple that was leaning against the wall, making out on the street. And I pushed Greg into this couple that was making out.
You shoved Greg?
While he was on the phone. And, and so he got off the phone and he goes, what was that? And I said, I don't know. I said, I'm so sorry. I do that to my wife. I think it's funny, but it really bugs her. And he goes,
you should have told him it was a spasm.
He said, I can see why.
I can see why.
Oh, you're like, hey, that. No, all you do is say, hey, that's for Scott in Boise State. You were owed that. Yeah. You had that coming.
I told the Boise State story to the spotter and to Mitch Juergens. And I was like, man, Greg really got him. Greg's like, I didn't get him. He's like, I was doing that out of professionalism. I was trying to figure out what the situation was.
Right.
Like, yeah, Greg. Sure.
Sure. You're not going to fool me.
As you delivered some of the nastiest body blows you could deliver.
Well, we've gone way too long. Thanks for everybody who hung out with us. It's your Morning After podcast. Hands, safe flight back to Salt Lake City, and let's kick it off tomorrow at noon, all right?
All right. Love and memories.
Be peace. Let's go. And Scotty and Lloyd, it's your Morning After podcast, all brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.